You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey everybody, Justin Zarian here. If you like what you hear on this show, on Digital Noise, or anything else on this site, please consider being a subscriber. There are hours and hours of content waiting for you there, including, starting at $2 a month, our news podcast, The Breakfast Pub, which I write the notes for. But at $5 a month, you can also get access to stuff like The Gathering, our party podcast. Or at $10 and higher, you can get access to our movie commentaries, which tons of fun, lots of great stuff there. And, you know, this is the way that we keep the site going, to be able to provide hours of entertainment for you guys. We also want to give a shout out to our sponsor, once again, Oscar Blues Brewery, the original brewery to put a craft beer in a can. And they just have tons of stuff available for you. Go look up oscarblues.com, that's Oscar with a K, to be able to find a brewery near you. With that, hope you enjoy the show. Cue the music.
Can Ben Foster ever play anyone that's not a crazy person in his movies? Because it feels like everything I've seen him in, like Lone Survivor, Hell or High Water, this movie, he's always playing a dude who's on the verge of insanity or crossing that threshold into insanity.
And Ben, if you're listening, which you probably are, don't stop playing those characters. This was fantastic.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the first, for lack of a better term, crazy or mentally ill characters that he's played where what you feel for him is primarily compassion throughout this film. And, yeah, I got to second Ben and say, don't stop playing these complex, troubled characters because you've really got a knack for it.
Yeah.
There's something about his eyes and that beard and that hair. But, yeah, I think this, compared to many of his other films, he is his most nuanced and is crazy. Like, it feels like a lot of those movies, like Lone Survivor, he's just that dude who's just, you know, wild guy. Just like, I'm ready to go kill me some people kind of thing.
Yeah.
This one, though...
Same with Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
He's a wild man.
Yeah, this one, though, it feels like there's a good reason. And we won't say why. It's actually a big mystery for what is important for this film.
It's revealed in the first 10 minutes of the film. I think that
it's revealed, like, near the end of the movie when she watches that newspaper clip, isn't it?
I'm talking about when you see that it's very obvious that he's a veteran suffering from PTSD.
I'd say
10 minutes in.
It was when he woke up from a nightmare and you hear a helicopter.
And he goes in and out of the VA, and she's talking with a man in the VA about suicidality and mental health among veterans. It's very clear what he's suffering from, particularly with the recurring dreams he has where he's waking up to noises like helicopters. And
you see also when he tries to do a normal job for a brief part of this film, you know, he hears, again, there's a helicopter involved in this job, and, you know, he just puts his face in his hands.
Breaks down.
Yeah, it's subtle, you can miss it, but the helicopter seemed to be his trigger.
Apparently so. I must not have been looking very carefully. So we should probably talk about the plot a little bit of this movie. So this is adapted from a book called My Abandonment that was released like 9 years ago, and it's actually from a Salt Lake City author, you know, local boy here. Yep. This is following this dad and his daughter who live out in this wilderness in, where was it again, Oregon?
Yeah, Oregon, and then...
And then Washington.
Parts of Washington and other parts of the movie.
Awesome. Yeah, you can probably see the Twilight vampires walking around the background when they get to Washington. Yeah. But anyways, they're living this very, like, total survivalist lifestyle. You know, they're living off the fat of the land. They got the basic necessities of tools and such.
Tarps are the main part of their houses.
Yeah. It's pretty much the only part of their house, aside from the two sticks that hold it up.
Yeah, real survivalist stuff.
Yeah. But then one day, their world is kind of shooken up because technically, they're living in this national park that is public property. And when that starts to come in conflict with people in the outside world, it really starts to shake up their lifestyle and really start to force some very uncomfortable truths that are coming out about their lifestyle. And especially with Ben Foster's character, the more that we understand that whole PTSD thing about him, it really affects their relationship in interesting ways, I find. And one of the things I can say about this, Ben was mentioning a little bit before we recorded, that this is much more character than plot driven, which I would agree with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, too, that just a warning for people, this movie is slow. I don't think it's boring at all, personally.
It takes its time.
Yeah, it is a very methodical, very subtle, very nuanced movie. And you shouldn't expect more because this is directed by Deborah Granick, who did Winter's Bone, another very quiet, intimate, character-driven story. But having said that, saying that it is slow and that warning of saying, if you can jive with this movie's pace, it is incredibly rewarding, I feel.
Yeah. Yes.
I almost feel like it's not a good idea to so much talk about pace, because even though it takes its time to develop things and explore ideas, there's not a single scene in this movie that doesn't have some kind of tension to it that isn't revealing more and more about these characters just in every scene in the movie.
Yeah, it takes its time in its scenes, but it's none of it seems like time wasted.
And it'll rip your heart out at regular intervals.
Oh, yeah. It will. Well, especially because just the idea about impermanence that happens throughout this movie. Yeah. This feeling that they just, especially Ben Foster's character, like he just cannot belong anywhere. I mean, that's the whole reason of surviving in the first place.
And it just, I think it has some interesting commentary early on just about how the government is encroaching on this lifestyle that they're both enjoying. But then, so initially you feel antagonistic towards them because they're splitting apart a family and there's pointless rules and regulations about not being able to live on public land. It really shows kind of the ugliness of that side of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of as the movie progresses, you see that despite those issues, there needs to be an organic...
It also never shows, though, these government characters as villains. It shows them as, you know, they've got their jobs... They have their jobs. The social worker doesn't come off as a villain. She comes off maybe a bit cold.
I think they're more antagonists. Like, they're not bad guys, but what they're doing is clearly invading the lifestyles of these people.
Yeah.
You know, they're a force that is definitely in contrast with these people. And with generally this lifestyle, which, to be fair, most of the people that they associate with in this environment are homeless people. So, you know, and that's a big problem in that area in Oregon and Washington. There's all big homeless communities out there.
But one of the themes in this is that the daughter doesn't have the same past that her father does.
Mm-hmm.
And that this lifestyle isn't the most perfect fit for her the way it is for him. And so there is a piece of, you know, you want to find a way to get this guy his help. And, you know, and get his daughter some kind of system that's working better for her. But you definitely see the sense of, you know, entrapment that the government workers are imposing on. For example, there's a great scene where the social worker shows up at a house they're living at now, and she says something to the effect of, like, oh, we just want to make sure you can live on your own or something. Like, we want to make sure you can have your independence. And it's... That's exactly what you pulled from them in the very beginning.
Everything that she does to say, we're going to set up your independence, further constrains them into the confines set up by this person.
Yeah, and you can tell the government's antagonistic in this, I think chiefly because they're trying to force something to happen, some kind of reckoning between the father and daughter about how they need to live their life when that's something that needs to develop organically. So much of this movie is about them discussing and coming to an understanding of what each of them wants out of life. And it's clear that because of some of his mental issues, he has a certain restlessness where he kind of needs to live a completely nomadic lifestyle. And she's looking for more stability. And that's the central tension here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really sold very well by these two lead performers. It's Ben Foster and, oh my goodness, Thomasin McKenzie, which I think the character actually has a different name in the book, but they're just like, we'll just call her Tom. That's just the name of the character, the name of the actress.
It fits the oddness of their relationship, the fact that, you know, the girl is just referred to as Tom.
When she's a terrific actress in that.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing her in future movies, but there, whenever she would get upset, her chin would quiver, and it would just break my heart every time I saw this.
Yes.
And Ben Foster always has like the perfect amount of tears that he's holding back in his eyes, and you'll have they'll be having a tense conversation, and it'll pass moments of silence where the camera is just kind of sitting on their faces, and it just lets it the emotional weight of these scenarios soak in.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I really love about that, too, is that, it, again, like I said, because it's so quiet, it doesn't, you know, it relies a lot on that kind of subtle gestures and subtle movements. This movie never once spoon-feeds you. You know, it really requires you to be an intelligent audience member to keep up with what it's trying to communicate emotionally and metaphorically, which apparently I failed because I missed that whole PTS thing in the beginning. But no, the more that I got into the movie, the more I'm like, oh, I see what they're trying to say, and I see what they're trying to communicate. And I think that's just really, you know, great pacing, great directing, great editing is a really great quality of this.
I want to talk real briefly about some of the really genius subtle things this director does. For example, the first scene where they have, you know, a real bit of a tense argument about, do we try to integrate ourselves into a much more normal family and household, or do we continue and go back to this nomadic type of lifestyle? They're standing on opposite sides of the screen, and, you know, the daughter's starting to make friends, she's starting to find hobbies, and the dad, you know, Ben Foster, he's sitting on the couch, and he's wearing an interesting costume there. He's wearing, you know, a thick, dark gray flannel shirt that's just a solid dark gray, and dark gray pants. And he kind of, just sitting there, looked like, you know, an old black and white picture of someone in a gulag. You know, he kind of had this, just the dark gray, thick flannel shirt, you know, button down, and then the dark gray pants. You know, you could see just this that sentiment of, I'm imprisoned emotionally, you know, through my illness by having to live in a house like a normal person. You just really subtle things like that all throughout it were really smart ways of conveying this message.
And your empathy for the guy is compounded by the fact that he's somehow, through all of this mental illness, done a terrific job of raising a young woman.
Oh yeah, they mentioned like she's got like a you know, higher than average reading level for her age, and she's really resourceful, and she's very smart. And
so the guy is pouring his heart into trying to raise this girl properly, and so much of the movie is about his struggle to provide her with stability, even though he seems to be able to provide her with everything else that she needs.
He clearly wants to be a loving father, but he doesn't have the stability himself to provide stability for her. You know, you can't give what you don't have. And I think that's really a big point of this movie. And also, one thing I wanted to point out, too, with the subtleness, there's something I noticed early in this movie where, to illustrate the phobia that he has of the open world, if you notice in the beginning of the film, there's a lot of tight shots when they're in the woods. They're very focused. They're very contained. They have this very contained lifestyle. But then when they have to go into the city to buy supplies and to get some stock up and stuff, it's very wide. It's very open. It's weirdly agoraphobic and very, you know, just that feeling where you're like, there's so much here that I'm going to be overwhelmed by it. And it's, again, just those
great... Well, that's in the sound design, too. The city noises versus the park noises.
I also like that that it brings up contemporary problems in, like, white rural America. Like, certain communities that are really plagued with things like the opioid crisis. Homelessness and suicidality among veterans is much, much, much higher than it is against standard people in the population. And this it really tackles that issue in one of the most compassionate ways I've ever seen put on film.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, if it's the book or Deborah Granick and Anne Rosalini who wrote the script with her, which they also wrote Winter's Bone together, but this movie really gets that lifestyle, really gets rural, you know, blue-collar workers, that kind of, you know, very rural lifestyle. It really understands and empathizes with them in ways that it's not just, oh, look at these sorry people. It's like, no, this is a way of life that's fascinating, and there's these great strengths and there's these great challenges.
Yeah, and the one other, you know, homeless person you meet and get to know, it's again, like everything else in this film, it's subtle, but he mentions that he was, you know, about 2 years ago prescribed, you know, similar pills for implied, you
know, PTSD and got addicted to them.
And he's a veteran too, just like the dad. And you know, it's again like everything else in this film, brilliantly subtle, but you feel it and you see it.
Yeah, you know, and that's my thing. When I thought about this film before we were reviewing this, I had to think to myself, was there anything I wasn't crazy about this movie? And the more I think about it, not really. You know, like, I went through this whole film. I can only say, like, maybe I'm not fully head over heels in love, like, 10 out of 10 perfect movie. But the more I think about this movie, I can't really think of anything I didn't enjoy. Even the slow pace, where I'm like, yeah, it's very measured. It's very, you know, you have to go with it. But if you go with it, you will be sucked into every second of this movie. And thankfully, it's really not that long. I think it's, what, like an hour, 40 minutes at most kind of thing?
I'm not sure.
It's something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a long investment at all. Usually you think, like, oh, it's going to be like a two-hour-plus epic kind of thing. It's like, no, it's in and out at a very reasonable length, I think.
There's one shot where it's supposed to look like bees are crawling on a certain person's hand, but I don't think the bees were actually on her hand. That's my one issue.
You know, that's an enormous issue. That's debatable. I couldn't tell fully with that one.
It's like, a goofy ass nitpick.
No, that's the joke. That's the entire joke here.
If we're gonna go for a goofy nitpick,
I want to clarify that so no one thinks that you're a fucking idiot.
Exactly. Like Justin, there's nothing wrong with this film. Like, obviously, you're not going to put bees on a little girl's hand, but obviously you're not going to do that. But, and I'm just being a pain for no reason, but
hey, as
this
long,
was super fun.
As long as it's not the Wicker Man, then it's fine. It's not the Wicker Man. I mean, the only thing I guess I could, you know, if we're going into goofy nitpicks, I mean, I really like, Thomason in this role. But we mentioned that she's New Zealand, you know, that's where she's from normally. And you couldn't tell, which is a great quality for her. Although, throughout this entire movie, you kind of, because it's so muted and so subtle, there's points where that quietness, it does feel like you want them to say something. And I get that's purposeful. But she kind of amplifies that with her kind of weird Michael Cera style delivery with every line.
There's a timidity that probably comes from living most of your life in the woods with your dad alone. And being,
oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But felt fitting. It felt very fitting.
Yeah, yeah. There was a point, though, where I'm just like, you know, every line that she says is kind of like this throughout most of the film.
Oh, but she emotes well, and this movie, I'm telling you.
I think
you,
that was very purposeful.
Oh, I'm sure. That's what I'm saying. It's a goofy nitpick. It's not really a valid complaint at all. Are there any other points you want to bring up? Because I feel like I got nothing but great things to say about this movie.
Man, is this one of the most compassionate movies I've seen in a long time, and man, did it get me emotional at, I'd say, three big intervals throughout this movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm curious, too, because I know Ben and I have not seen Winter's Bone. You did, though, right, Ethan?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest... I wasn't the biggest fan of that one.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, what do you feel makes this movie better than Winter's Bone, personally?
I felt more emotionally engaged. Like, Winter's Bone is a very kind of... it's a performance-driven character piece, but I didn't... I think there might be a degree of subjectivity, because when you watch that film, you can tell how well made it is. But something about that backcountry, meth-cooking, crime-ridden Missouri... It doesn't engage me on the same level of this very moving father-daughter story. Now, but objectively, that's a well-made movie. It didn't engage me on nearly the emotional level that this one did.
All right. No, very fair. Very fair. So, I guess we can just go on to ratings then. Ben, would you like to start off?
Sure. I'll give this 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5 what, though?
Oh, dude. 5 out of 5... cans of beans that they eat at a certain part of this film.
That's way more cans they had than they had available that scene.
Yes, but I'm giving them 5. You said I could give them.
Ben supplied them 2 extra cans of beans for that rating alone.
Yes, there you go. 5 out of 5 cans of beans. I'm a big fan. Very well done. Very subtly done. Very, you know, just good, very effective stuff.
Yeah. Ethan, what about you?
9 out of 10 matches that are almost running out.
Indeed. Like I said, I mean, this is going to sound like a broken record. I think this movie is easily in my top 3 I've seen this year so far. You know,
easily.
Yeah, I can't say for sure it's going to make top 10 by the end of the year, because there's still so many movies coming out this year. But so far, this has hit me on a level that I thought was way more impactful than anything I've seen. Because, you know, some of my favorite films this year have mostly been genre films. You know, stuff that's like fun or dark or brooding or horror-filled. But this one is the one that really makes me think. This one, especially, and I'm not going to say even what, but the ending, the way this movie ends, I think was just right. You know, like just the way that it handled it was just so... It was appropriate. That's all I can really say. It felt like that was the way the story should have ended. And so I'm going to give it... 9 out of 10 classes where they teach you how to hold bunnies.
Ah, those 4-H Future Farmers of America classes.
Yeah. I mean, we were discussing, this is a great companion piece to Skyscraper. You know,
for sure.
Practically the same film. They're both about fathers that love their family. And so, yeah, if you're going to go see Skyscraper, you could just see this instead.
You know, they just take the literal thing of Dwayne Johnson scaling a mountain, and they do it with figuratively with Ben Foster scaling the mountain of PTSD, I guess. Yeah, the building of PTSD.
Yeah.
You know, and this movie, it did entertain that fantasy of mine, like, you know, one day we're like, well, if I really wanted to get away from it all, maybe I would just move into that park at the end of the movie. Just like, you know, that seemed like the best, like, you know, just away from the community. It made me really fantasize for the simple life. But then it reminded me too, it's like, they probably don't have a lot of video games out there. So that might be a problem.
Very limited video game selection.
you could plug a Super Nintendo into a CRTV and you don't need no damn internet.
Or your Switch.
Just play Chrono Trigger.
Bring your Switch out.